From NPR Music, you're connected to All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan. Will Oldham has recorded under a number of names, including Palace, and currently his persona, Bonnie Prince Billy. The new and seventh Bonnie Prince Billy CD is out. It's called Beware. It was recorded in Chicago with a big band. Having listened to his music since his Palace days in the 90s, I figured a show with Will Oldham playing DJ might be filled with maybe mountain music, maybe John Fahey, or even the Grateful Dead. But he played none of that. So you're about to hear one of the more surprising DJ shows we've done. I met Will Oldham at WNYC in New York City back in February to talk about the music he loves and the new Bonnie Prince Billy record called Beware. One thing I love to do is to ask people the first thing they ever saved their money up to buy as a record, because it may be an insight for you as to what you fell in love with young. So
it is.
What would that be?
Modifying it just a little bit, because I didn't save up the money. I think I asked for the record for my birthday and was given $5 to go and buy it, because it was like, I think it was $4.99. And it was advertised on television. I knew that they had it at the drugstore. They had a cardboard stand with stacks of this.
What was this?
It was a compilation, a novelty song compilation called Dumb Ditties, which there's a CD now available called Dumb Ditties, but it's a different track selection altogether.
K-Tel maybe back then?
That kind of thing. I don't think this was K-Tel. But immediately began to feel snobbish towards the other novelty song compilations and to feel like I really had the deepest, best one.
And what was on this novelty compilation? Some of the things?
It has certain infallible classics such as, I think it opened with My Ding-a-Ling. Chuck Berry, My Ding-a-Ling, which is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And then it also, the other like huge smash hit that it had on there was Monster Mash.
Which is probably on every novelty, right? I think it's
exactly.
I think it's in Law somewhere.
Yeah, I think so. But then it was full of strange things that have served me well over the years to remember and to have gotten deep into, like a song called Bridget the Midget. It was a story song where there was an announcer talking about, here's this big show coming up, it's Bridget the Midget, and Bridget the Midget was somebody who does a chipmunk-style sped-up voice. And then she does a little thing. She's like, I want to send them, thank you, folks, thank you. Do you feel all right? And the audience says, yeah, I want to hear you. Do you feel all right? And then it goes back to the announcer who sings sort of the melody. Oh, and the Mr. Bassman, that song?
Mr. Bassman.
Yeah, exactly.
Boom, 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 boom.
Exactly. That was on there. And Here Comes the Judge, which was a big hit for somebody, but this wasn't the hit I later learned.
It was sort of a Rowan and Martin laughing gag thing.
I think it actually had
Flip
some
Wilson
kind of...
Wilson might have been participant.
I think there was one version of it that I think has some sort of R&B soul cred that was a hit, but wasn't this version. And Tan Shoes with Pink Shoelaces. He wore tan shoes with pink shoelaces, a polka dot vest. And The Teddy Bear's Picnic, Ding Dong the Witch is Dead, On Top of Spaghetti.
You sort of got your money's worth.
Fully. I haven't listened to that record, I'm sure, in 30 years, and I think I still know every lyric of every song on the record.
So when you play something for us from it.
Okay, yeah. A significant song on there to me was this song that still kind of blows my mind as like a erotic ballad, which is seven little girls sitting in the back seat kissing and hugging with Fred.
Whoever Fred was.
Fred wasn't the singer, and I was duped for a while into thinking that you have to identify with the singer, as a kid. So as a kid, I felt it was a very tragic and sad song because it was this poor guy who seemed nice as anything up there doing, and then all these girls were being, nice to him, but kind of cruel in the same way. Because they sing this refrain to him about how all seven of them are actually happier back in the back with Fred rather than giving this guy any sort of like shoulder rub or anything like that. And then later I realized that you don't have to be the singer, you can actually be Fred. And that's been my goal in life, yeah.
Let's give a listen to this. And this is what, Paul Evans?
Paul Evans is his name.
Paul Evans was. He probably didn't write it.
He may have though, because it's a very personal kind of song.
Uh-huh. All right.
Sitting in the back seat, kissing and a hugging with Fred. I said, why don't one of you come up and sit beside me? And this is what the seven girls said.
All together now, one, two, three. Keep your mind on your driving, keep your hands on the wheel, keep your snoopy eyes on the road ahead. We're having fun, sitting in the back seat, kissing and a hugging with Fred.
Are there more refrains we should listen to, or do we get the gist of...
I guess you get the gist. I mean, drove. I could sing the whole.
Go to the next verse for me.
Verse is drove through the town, drove through the country, showed them how my motor could go. I said, how do you like my triple carburetor? And one of them whispered low. We're gonna do all together now. One, two, three.
Have you ever in your life tried to write a novelty tune?
Yes, actually, I just did. I tried to write one. A guy called and said, you know, I was wondering if you'd be interested in writing a song for a video game that's set in the 1970s. And I was thinking of trying to license all this music from the time. But then I thought maybe it would be more fun to try to get people to write them. And so I got really excited about it and never heard from the guy again. But I wrote this song and then recorded it with my friend Cheyenne in Louisville. And it's a man and a woman singing to each other about, like, the man is singing about how he's completely attracted to all the manly things about this woman, and she's very attracted to all the womanly things about the man. And so they go down the list of
characteristics
that not only of the manly characteristics of the woman, but also what it feels like to be a woman wanting that man, but as a man being a woman wanting that man.
And it's called?
The Girl in Me.
There's a girl in me that makes me wear bright colors when I walk the streets. And there's a girl in me that makes me want to feel you deep inside of me. And there's a girl in me makes me pose before a mirror like a movie star. And makes me wanna dance around the pole instead of sitting at the bar.
Well, the man in me must love the girl in you.
Cause there's someone in me that sees you without clothes and sees what I should be. And heaven only knows what will become of me.
Cause there's a man in me that wants to dominate you and put you in your place. And there's a man in me that wishes I had a beard and mustache on my face. And there's a man in me that gets short of breath in the girls' locker room and wants you to be the bride and me to be the groom.
Well, the girl in me must love the man in you. Cause there's someone in me that sees you without clothes and sees what I should be. And heaven only knows what will become of me. Cause there's someone in me that others knew was not the way that I should be. God chose for me a color, and Lord knows that she may not agree. We should explore our mirror sexuality, but we can share our secrets in our privacy. must love the man in you.
The man in me must love the girl in you.
The you in me must love the me in you.
And why did somebody come, no offense, Will, why did somebody come to you for a 70s computer game song?
I know.
Not a clue.
I don't ask. I mean, I don't ask why I get any of the opportunities I get because it just wastes time. They might say no, you know, or just don't give them a chance to give you second thoughts.
How old were you when you were when you first heard that Kissing and a Hugging with Fred song? And where were you living and growing up? And
I lived, as I more or less do now as well, in Louisville, Kentucky. And I have no idea. I guess the thing to do would be to somehow get a copy of that record and figure out what year it came out. It could have been 74, 75, 76, 77. It was sometime in the 70s. I was born in 70.
The original thing came out in the 50s. It was my childhood.
Right. But this comp, I think, was all 50s and 60s songs. I don't think there was anything post-1970 on this record.
Do you have parents that are artists at all? Is there something about, I don't know, there's something about the way you just thought about the novelty stuff. There's stuff, and obviously having heard your music for all these years, I'm just always curious whether there's art in the family that makes people think of things in, you know, more curious ways, more inquisitive ways.
Right. My mom has done a lot of art, but she's mostly done it, you know, which isn't to say that it wasn't, of course, a grain inside of her, but she didn't do it until I was probably at least 12 or 13, you know, definitely didn't do it in my super youth. But then she's done a lot since then. And my dad, he took pictures. Amy's an amateur photographer, and they were inspiring pictures. Like, as a kid, I was always thinking, wow, those are great pictures. And then they had a great record collection also.
Tell me about that.
It was a record collection. It's interesting that we just moved my mom's house, so going through a bunch of the vinyl. It was just a kind of a diverse record collection. I don't, my first Leonard Cohen records were there. You know, they had a copy of Death of a Ladies' Man and the Best Of, which is a cool way of finding Death of a Ladies' Man and getting into that record before I got into other records, because I think a lot of people are put off by the sound of that record because that's the Phil Spector produced record.
Which I thought, knowing the other stuff, I thought was very cool. But you're right, hearing it as a first would be a weird thing to do.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. But I had, and you know, I think we listened on road trips to that song Paper Thin Hotel countless times. So that became just a part of my soul, that song. So the rest of the record was easy to get past the whatever strangeness about his vocal delivery that I think he is on the record complained about, because that Phil Spector may have used guide vocal takes as opposed to like what Leonard Cohen may or may not have been comfortable with as a final.
So you hear stuff like Leonard Cohen. What other?
I remember a mixtape that I found in my 20s that my dad had made that had Roberta Flack sing Suzanne and music from La Dolce Vita and the Midnight Cowboy instrumental theme.
These are all very evocative, moody tunes. Very
totally.
Yeah. And that creeps into what you do for sure. I mean, you definitely, your music comes on and it sets a tone in a room.
Mm-hmm.
I've just started listening to the new record. How would you describe the sound of this record, the feeling, or maybe there's some geography into where it was done that goes into the sound of this record.
I think it's, say, in comparison to other records that I've been involved with, it's kind of a little bit rich and chaotic, perhaps.
And I didn't think chaotic, but
well, I guess it's a chaos. You know, it's an attractive chaos. It's not a scary chaos. Like, I don't want to jump into that mess. It's more like, oh, I can see there's these things going that way and these
swampy?
Things going that way. Mm-hmm. No, I wouldn't say swampy. Like,
okay.
when I listen to it, you know, I oftentimes I might, you know, and these are not for listeners to think, oh, if I like that record, I'll like this record, but to think, say, of Off the Wall, the Michael Jackson record.
I'm looking puzzled, as you can see me on this microphone.
Well, I think also because there's a like with Michael Zarang doing drums and percussion on this record, and Josh Abrams playing, and then there were other folks from the Chicago like improvisational and jazz scenes that came and played some on the record. And so I guess what I mean is where Quincy Jones like kind of brought jazz players to the pop R&B of Michael Jackson's music with those two records. That's what I hear when I hear this record. I think, oh, this is so great that this music gets this approach from these musicians and has a liveliness based on, you know, their excitement at attacking it, you know, a kind of music that on a daily level they don't get to necessarily play.
Can you pick me a cut on the record that might illustrate some of that?
Let me think in my little mind brain.
Does it help to?
I mean, the last song is Afraid Ain't Me, and that's got a great, it's got great cornet parts by Rob Mazurek and great flute parts, and it's,
Let's give it a listen. Cool. Afraid Ain't Me.
Yeah.
And the record's just called Beware. It's not called Beware Bonnie Prince Billy, right?
It doesn't really matter, yeah.
Just goes,
yeah.
Okay.
However,
let's give a listen to some of them.
All right.
Long live the people, hear me shout. And tell my enemies I'm blind now. Cold and clear. Cold and clear. Alone I may be. Trust to me, your little ones. Slow and sweet I teach. Woman, man in blended garments. Tried to block my greatest moments. Cold and clear. Cold and clear. Alone I may be, but afraid ain't me.
Now, I totally hear what you're saying now. And I didn't, just as a casual listen two times on the train because I only just got it, I didn't catch that. Tell me how you do this, but I get the impression that you didn't tell these musicians how to play the song, that there's a... That chaos is coming from each one of them sort of finding the song?
Yeah, exactly. It's a combination because that's the first place, that's where we start. Is that everything comes from each person, and then sometimes we will, you know, reapproach either an individual's performance just in a certain part, or we might then, after the first couple times of working it out together, say, oh, you know, someone might even say, I really don't like what I'm playing. help me out.
Huh?
And then we would say, oh, how about if you do this part more like this? Yeah. I mean, but that's where it starts, and that's where it ends. It starts there and ends up ideally as some sort of, you know, cooperative effort.
Now, how did you present these songs to them? You and a guitar? You and a...
Yeah. The core band, which is Michael Zerang, Emmett Kelly, Joshua Abrams, and Jennifer Hutt, and me, we had played a bunch together, and then I presented them with recordings of just me sort of trying to make my way through the songs just with a guitar, you know, with a single microphone. And that's just to get everybody on the same page as to where the changes are, what the words are, what the basic melodies are, and then we would just start running through them together after everybody had done a little bit of homework.
Did they surprise you with what they came back?
Oh, yeah.
That's cool.
But they surprised me, but a neat thing about this was that we had played about a month's worth of shows together playing other songs, and so part of it, you know, I began to look forward to, you know, some of the direction of knowing where some of those surprises were going to come from, you know, thinking, oh, I wonder if Michael's going to bring some of this into this song based on another song that might have a similar rhythm or a similar melody. But yeah, of course, it's surprising and for all of us, but I think we were all, because there was a month in between us playing together and us recording, so everyone was looking forward to sitting down and seeing what happened when they threw their part out at everybody else.
Can you tell when that happens on records you like, that where that organic process comes about, and is that an attraction to you as a listener of music?
It's a huge attraction, and I can imagine it. You know, I'm not going to say that somebody couldn't achieve that feeling
composing,
you know, composing it, right. Or with after multiple overdub takes, you know, I didn't get that one note, but it still comes off feeling vibrant and present. And I also think that, you know, you can hear things that were played in that kind of confrontational, improvisational way that might not sound very interesting at all and might suffer from that kind of approach. But that's what I do. That's what I like in a record, is thinking I'll always be able to be listening to these people playing with each other and these people discovering certain aspects of their part as the music is going along. That's what I like in records.
So Will Oldham, as a DJ today, is there anything you brought to the table that has any of that?
Yeah, well, to me, a good example of it, and again, this might not be something that...
That really happened,
or that other people would think of when they hear this recording. But there's a singer based out of Oslo right now named... She makes records as Susanna, or as Susanna and the Magical Orchestra.
Hmm.
That's with different sets of collaborators and the two artist titles. But the song that I brought today is a Susanna song, also an original. She does about 50% covers and about 50% original songs to this date. And this is an original called Wild as the Will off her most recent record, Flower of Evil.
Heroic heart, wild.
Thank you for that. That is something else. She's a great singer.
She's a great singer. And yeah, there was a, like, I like her singing so much. I mean, I get so caught up in it, and it just is like, I don't understand fully why, but
that doesn't matter.
Yeah, there was a neat time where we had played in Oslo last spring, and she came to the show, and so we learned one of her songs beforehand, just sort of as a tribute, just, you know, and then she ended up coming to Copenhagen maybe a week later, and she came to the show, and I said, you know, asked if she would sing that song with us, and we would turn it into a duet where she could take a verse and I could take a verse. And just during the sound check, hearing how she was using her voice to navigate this strange arrangement, just mm-hmm. strange because it was with different instrumentation, and hearing how she was picking where everything was going to sit, and how just really beautifully the performance got to this place. It was nice experience.
The very opening line to your record really got me, because it's such a simple, absolute, beautiful line. It says, I want to be your only friend. Yeah. Is that scary?
Yeah.
it's a great way to open a record. And it's one of those lines where, if you take out the word only, which is usually where that song would go in most pop land, I want to be your friend.
Yeah.
Even leaving in that scary, it would still be a normal pop song.
Yeah.
But it's the only friend line.
Yeah.
Do you have a clue how these things come to be, or do you have a clue?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fine.
I mean, I sort of do, but sometimes it's, I mean, I can say, you know, knowing that wherever the line came from, it was eventually given to this voice character thing, which is Bonnie Prince Billy, which I can pretend to have, you know, a distant relationship to, and think, like, I know for a fact that
that's a line for Bonnie Prince.
And I'm sure that he would very much love for him to be the only, like, music in anybody's record collection. there, that's why he sings it. You know, are you scared? Could you live with that? Me as your desert island, like, dictator?
Let's listen to it. It's a great way to open an album up.
I want to be your only friend.
Is that scary?
My active mind, don't wish it so. Watch out for these silent thoughts. That's where the seed of soul sucking grows.
beautiful sound.
Yes. The little breakdown part, yeah.
Other personality quirks in of Bonnie Prince in the lyrics of that song?
Other ones? I don't know. I'm sure. I'm trying to think. I was thinking again. What's, and since you are a shining light, there's many that you'll see. Oh, coming back to you. Do you know that Leonard Cohen song on Various Positions? Because that was an early record that I think that was the first Leonard Cohen record that I ever bought, was Various Positions, and I bought it from a mail order company that was a big newsprint catalog. It sort of a little bit fell through the cracks because he had been dropped from Columbia and then put this record out, and it came out, I think, on a record label called Passport Records. And then later, Columbia realized that they screwed up and bought it back, and now it's on there. But there's a song, oh yeah, Coming Back to You, and he has a nice moment or a nice sentiment where he's talking about someone, and he says, since you're a shining light, there's many that you'll see. And so he has kind of a graceful, you know, chivalrous way of describing somebody's light being experienced by other people. And here, Bonnie feels only hostility towards those who are experiencing the light of the person who's hearing the song. Haven't gotten to that place yet. You know, I'm not there yet. I'm not at that, but I'm still younger than he was when he made that record.
Well, who's Little Wings, and why is this on your list?
Okay, Little Wings. It's on the list because it is what it is. Because it has, you know, the soft power that it has. But Little Wings is sort of a musical conglom that's ruled by the directive forces of a guy named Kyle Field, who's also a super good visual artist and a good fellow, who I met in San Luis Obispo, I don't know, 10 years or so ago. He took me around. We had a nice time, and we've remained close since then. And I'm sure one reason that we remain close is because I learned that I was big, that his music hit me in good places. So it's very easy to stay close to someone who has that power over you. And one thing I look forward to most with Little Wings is retiring and just sitting and listening to it all day long and feeling like I'm still getting something done. because the music is rich, but it also supports a settled mind and a settled emotional space, which I don't have yet, but I think upon retirement maybe I'll get there.
With what song?
Scooby. It's called Scooby. It's spelled S-C-U-B-Y. No, it has nothing to do with our favorite dog.
The Doo.
Yeah, the Doo.
Totally lost in fog, who's not? I plan my bindle over and over. Left alone now like a log to rot. I dig it deep beneath the clover. Way far out beyond the buoys, our October shark is waiting. I look twice as soft again as this solemn climb, baby. Steer clear, Scooby, in the canyon. In the mirror where is the well? While we fear the wooden city's warning. Scooby's gone again.
Have you ever imagined writing a song with this fellow?
With Kyle? Yeah, I think I've imagined it. I don't know. I think we've talked about doing some kind of making some kind of musics, but yeah, maybe we will. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I could hear it.
Yeah.
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 When you put a group of songs together like you did in Beware, do they often come from doing it in a certain, in a given place or a given place in your life or a certain time? Is there overlap? Do you pull songs from way back? And I get the impression when I listen to this, I guess I'm asking this question absolutely upside down, but the impression I get from this is that this was written in a given time, that this isn't like over a long period of time.
Right.
And maybe some of that is because you put out a record not so long ago.
I generally feel like there needs to be a connection between the songs, and yes, a time connection is a very obvious and convenient.
What about geography?
Geography. This is a unique record, or maybe it shares something with like the first Palace Brothers record, There's No One What Will Take Care of You, from back in 93, in that I kind of, all the songs but one on this record were put sort of conceived in the same room,
And where's that room?
That room was at the Headlands National Seashore in Sausalito, California.
This is not some place you live.
I lived there for 3 months.
Wow.
Last.
To write? Is this like a writing workshop or something?
It's a arts center that has residencies for artists. And yeah, I was more or less kind of invited to go there and went there. And yeah, that was a good thing. That was just a great thing.
I've done some of these artist residencies before, and I've seen the habits of different people, and some writers will do everything they can to avoid going into that whatever cabin, quote-unquote, and some people will just, I can't wait, and they get there, and that's all they do. Are you either of those, or are you?
I'm the latter, and I would see other people arrive and talk about when they were going
to
start work, and then I would just notice that they didn't, and I couldn't imagine that mind frame because...
Yeah,
it was just such
an
nice,
opportunity.
Yeah, such a nice place to. I had a good room because all the buildings were old decommissioned military buildings, and I had a big barn essentially.
Does anything? Well, it's obvious that some of it does, but can you tell the connection between the? Besides the stretch of time that you now have and the uninterrupted stretch of time, can you tell whether this big barn, this place, this landscape winds up anywhere in the songs?
How did it wind up in the songs? I think it made these songs more kind of, to me, they're more a part of the musical universe in general rather than the musical universe that's specific to what I normally have access to. In writing these songs or however you call it, assembling the songs or putting the songs together, I was out of space and out of time when I was there. I walked to where I worked on trails on mountain ridges with the ocean below me and wind and trees through a little tiny eucalyptus grove and smells, and got a chance to, and I didn't have a cell phone that got
a
signal out there.
You're not a watch wearer.
I'm not a watch wearer, didn't have a cell phone that functioned out there. So immediately I left lots of things behind, and at the same time I feel like I was attempting to take my place among Elvis and June Tabor. Do you know that?
Oh, I love June Tabor.
Listening to June Tabor and Elvis Presley.
For folks who don't know June Tabor, she's a great English folk singer.
Mm-hmm.
Silly Sisters is one of the groups she sang with. But
She made two records, Silly Sisters, with Matty Pryor, but mostly it's solo records.
Yeah.
And
but when you said Elvis, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Any more, you have to say which Elvis.
Elvis between 70 and 74, 75.
Okay.
Like
this is Elvis Presley between
Elvis Presley,
again.
Yeah. The power, sort of the power songs, the big arrangements and
ba-da-ba.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, like that's the way it is.
That's June Tabor and Elvis Presley, man. I love that. Uh-huh. And that goes to the diversity of parents' record collection, whether those were in that collection or not, I don't know. But you...
I don't think... I mean, I might not be correct, but I wouldn't think that June Tabor or Elvis Presley would think that there's something that significantly different.
You don't think Elvis Presley would think June Tabor is really different than Elvis Presley?
I think he would just die for her music.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, you've just... The sparks in my brain trying to connect and they just won't. But
I can see him. I can picture him like cornering her, you know, in my dream world, like cornering her after a show and just focusing down with her and saying, you know, on that song Scarecrow, I just, you know, I love when your voice goes like this. And then I can hear him singing a little part of that song to her. Yeah, totally.
I love your brain. Take me to another piece of music that you brought to the table here.
Okay, I think potentially the last one we have even is, I think this song is called Demonology, and it's from, there's a group in Louisville called Speed to Rome. This is their most recent record called Devils and Ghosts, which I don't believe it's achieved any sort of proper release. It's sort of
you can hear it on MySpace. That's
you can hear it on
as
MySpace.
Proper as
there you go.
Many things are these
days. Yeah, but it's a phenomenal and powerful record that's kind of both frightening and exciting at the same time. It's a group that George Wethington, David Byrd, Peter Townsend, and my brother Paul Oldham, and Paul also recorded it as well, and it's just really, really throws down.
Let's hear it. You said Pete Townsend, and that guitar was fierce, but that wasn't Pete Townsend.
No.
I mean, not the Pete Townsend.
Yeah, no, the drummer is actually Pete Townsend from Louisville, not Pete Townsend of The Who.
Sorry, and I'm sorry that I brought that up, because I'm sure someone like that would get that a lot.
It's probably good in case anybody who's listening also was confused there for a moment. There's healthy confusion and unhealthy confusion, and I would deem that unhealthy confusion.
So what song should we go out on?
Well... per your recommendation, you chose a song I dearly love. It should be called My Life's Work, I'm pretty sure that's the name of it. And it definitely was a song that absolutely from beginning to end for me, although I didn't tell any of the other musicians this, that I was thinking, how could I put a song together that I might hope that Elvis Presley could sing during this period that I like so much, that's oftentimes referred to as the Las Vegas period, because I just feel like he, you know, just really exploded and deconstructed some great songs, some songs that other people had already recorded and some songs that were fresh to listeners at that point, or potentially even written with Elvis Presley in mind, as this one was. But just thinking, like, the damage that he could have done to this, and then trying to think, like, well, since Elvis can't do it, I guess we have to try.
And so why wouldn't you tell the musicians this that's in your head? You think it would have just come out too cliche or too...
Not necessarily. I just think it's more interesting to see if what I've written, okay, how what I've written ends up, you know? So I have lots of ideas when I put the chords and melodies together and the lyrics. But the joy of playing with other people is to hear how the music takes shape in through their ears and fingers and mouths and eyes.
It's a great song, and it's a really good record. It's called
Thanks.
Beware.
Thanks very, very much.
Pleasure to meet you.
Great pleasure. Thanks.
You want to go from here to there? Where is this valley? Take me there. I will pull ridge to ridge with great stone cracking. I take this slow home.